Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop.
It's Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson. Tom talks about life, showbiz, art, and more from the Wilson World Studios located in California, about a half-hour drive through traffic to the sparkling Pacific Ocean, where it's only $7 to park. Here's Tom.
Welcome to the podcast, everybody. I'm Tom Wilson. John Pavlovsky is the only guy I know who mispronounces his name consistently. He always introduces himself as Pavlovsky, and we've had it out. There's a V. There's a second V in the name, right? Like Pavlov, Pavlov's dog skiing. It's Pavlovsky. But he's from New Jersey, so I don't push it. He's also the only guy I've known who has voluntarily electrocuted himself, because we were at a cocktail party of some kind. There was a dog collar with some kind of electronic chunk thing on it, and he lifts it up, asks the lady, what is this? Well, the dog's been barking a lot, and we put it on the dog, and it shocks the dog, and so she'll stop barking. And John puts the collar to his own neck and goes, row, row, this doesn't work at all. Wait a minute. And he actually shocked himself and fell onto the sofa at the party. So John's a producer. He is a director. Well, all of the TV shows and the radio show, whenever the big interview happens with the big, gigantic, multimillionaire producer, it's always the special guy with the hair done just right. And he looks so thoughtful and cocks his head and takes off his glasses that aren't really prescription, but they make him look smart. And he always says, it's all about story. But we know it's not about story, because he just finished doing whatever, Zap 3 with Scott Baio and Willie Ames. So, but John is a producer and an art director and a worker in Hollywood who's had to make it happen for many, many years. That's most of the people that I know in the business are people who aren't too fancy about it, don't have the house in Malibu. They're just workers, just like any other city. They go to work and they produce things or direct things and they make it happen. They steal shots if they have some. Stealing a shot is like you're at a still session, a still photo shoot or a movie, whatever it is, and you haven't gotten the proper permits to do a shot of a car going through that intersection. Well, turn on the cameras and we'll just do the shot. We'll do it four times in a row. And if somebody finds out and the cops come, we'll just run. But that's a lot of the stuff that happens in Hollywood. So John's worked on movie shoots and commercials and magazine spreads and advertising. He's done all of it, and I thought it would be interesting to talk to him. So here's John Pavlovsky.
It's Big Pop Fun.
John Pavlovsky's here. John Pavlovsky, the man who mispronounces his own last name. Why? Why lose the V? Why?
Because, I'll
there.
Tell you why.
Somebody put it in there.
Everybody in my family is like, what's your problem? And I have never been able to change it.
Change your way of pronouncing your own name.
Exactly. And I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because up until third grade, my name was without the second V.
What?
It was Pavlovsky. So kindergarten, all that, learning to write your name and all that. That's how I learned it. And we all pronounced it Pavlovsky.
And one night at dinner, Dad says, I'm thinking of adding another V.
No. It was supposed to have the V. When the family came here from Europe, they did the phone, the first phone. Not even the immigration. It was there. But when my grandfather got the phone and it was in the phone book, it was out without the second V. So they just did everything that way, without
the phone
the
book,
beat.
not even at Ellis Island or
not
something,
Ellis
where they
misspelled. And then
literally the phone book,
the phone
and grandpa
book
goes,
did it,
hey,
and then even my father's birth certificate didn't have the second V.
Yeah.
So,
but you don't put an R in certificate either. Now that we're thinking about it, because you said birth certificate, so you don't use an R in certificate, and you don't use a second V in Pavlovsky.
I said certificate.
You have a thing with consonants.
Certificate.
Oh, okay. There it goes. It's
I didn't
back.
Say. What
I think you said certificate.
Certificate.
I think you said it in
well,
a
maybe.
Jersey way.
So, I'm not good with R's.
So you saw Buddy Hackett shoot a guy?
No, he didn't shoot
what
a
happened?
Guy, but he waved a gun at a guy.
And what
he,
was
shot,
that?
He did shoot the gun in the air later. He just shot it.
He shot a gun in the air?
Yeah, shot it before he walked back in the house.
What happened?
There, like I told you, I wish I could have a better memory of it. Because this was years
But he lived over in Whittier Road or whatever.
It was in Beverly Hills.
Between Sunset and Santa Monica Boulevard, there's a shortcut that you take.
It's that little street. Is it? It's not Whittier. No. It's the one before. It's like several blocks before you get to the Beverly Hills
Hotel. It's on one of those things. LA has all those little cut-throughs where you cut through and you're trying to get up to Sunset and you would pass Buddy Hackett's house, which had an elephant, right? Like an elephant sculpture outside on the front lawn.
That I don't remember.
And I remember more about it than you. In fact, I wasn't even there when he shot the gun, but I'm going to tell you what happened. So he comes out. No, I don't know what happened.
He was pulling out trash cans. He was just dragging the trash cans from the back alley thing, you know, the gate to the yard. And he's just walking. He's pulling it out.
Well, who doesn't carry a gun when you're pulling out your trash cans?
He's pulling his trash. And the trash guys were down the street. And as I remember, I think he was mad that he didn't get it out in time. And one of them come back and they weren't coming back. And he was just
yelling at him. Oh, so he was late for the trash can guys.
Then he was mad at him. And then he shot the gun up in the air. And started cursing and then walked back in the house. And he was wearing a Steve Austin, remember the 70s one, you know, overall, the zipper.
Velour or what?
No, polyester. That.
A Steve Austin with the $6
million
man.
$6 million man. Remember his little jumpsuits?
Oh, so he was wearing one of those one-piece things
zipper
with the big zipper that goes all the way down with a belt on it or something?
I've been working on the railroad, you know, the blue and white stripe, but I had the little belt.
Yeah, he wasn't ever – Buddy Hackett wasn't close to bionic or anything.
No.
No, not even close. But so he comes out, and so Buddy Hackett's in a one-piece jumpsuit thing.
And this
but
is
he's
in
got
the
80s. A gun.
This is in the 80s.
In the pocket of his jumpsuit thing?
Pistol, handgun. I didn't see the kind of caliber or whatever. I must have had it in the pocket. I don't know. Could he have been carrying it in that?
So you were fixing a house or something.
I was working down a house.
And he just comes out and starts yelling at the trash guys. And they won't come back. And he pulls a gun on the trash guy.
Boom, in the air. And I'm just looking at him. And he just kind of cursing to himself under his breath and walked back in his house.
Yeah. Well, who hasn't done
that? That's the only time I ever saw Buddy Hackett.
Who hasn't done that? I once, they didn't take my recyclables, and I pulled out a bazooka. And I didn't injure anyone. I just shot it down the street. Just to see. It went under a car, and then it just, most of the, you know, the rocket fuel was spent. But I don't think it made it to the ocean, so, because
so
I'm
didn't
ecologically
like my,
friendly.
My name story, you didn't let me finish. You had to jump on a Buddy Hackett, huh? Is that it? Am I boring you already? Am I too boring for this podcast? Is that what you're trying
you,
to say?
Look, you're right at the level where maybe you shouldn't be doing it.
You know,
maybe
hey.
Not. So, yeah.
Well, if you stopped interviewing me like Mike Douglas, maybe, you know, hey.
Like Mike Douglas.
Yeah, you're moving, trying to get to commercial break or something. Is that what we're doing?
Let's
here?
Take a commercial then.
Okay. Watermelon. What is this? Watermelon.
I don't know. I made
you
a little drink.
Got great refreshments in this studio.
I made you a drink. So what? Okay. What's the name
ice?
Thing?
Can we hear the ice on the mic?
Yes. Ooh. I'm sure we can.
See, bet you everybody's engaged by that. Isn't the sound of ice very refreshing?
If you take one more second with this, I'm not going back to your dad changing the V. So your dad finally changes the V.
Third he puts grade. All of a sudden, one day, I'm told, you got to put the second V in your name. And everything, school records, our birth certificates, my brother and sister, we all changed it. But somehow, I didn't register in my head, and I kept saying the name the same way. And I never stopped saying it that way.
So now...
Even though that's not the correct, and never was the correct way to say our name.
Well, I'm glad you copped to it, that I mispronounced my own last name.
I totally do. And now it's just the way it is, and I don't really care.
Okay, that's good.
You know?
That's good.
But then everybody, you know, when they think they're spelling it, they think, oh, and they don't put the second V. And then when they hear me say it. Now, when I tell somebody in business or something, I got to spell the name, I say it right.
Yeah. You do?
Yeah.
You pronounce it right in business? You actually have... special times that you pronounce your name
yes.
correctly.
And I spell it out the same way every time. P as in Peter, A, V as in Victor, L, O, V as in Victor, S as in Sam, K, Y.
That's good, man.
On the phone.
On the phone,
sure. On the phone.
So far, I've never.
You don't have to.
I don't have to. What?
You don't have
Wilson
to.
Is a very
Wilson.
Difficult spelling.
What?
It's from Western Europe. P and, you know, we don't use umlauts or any Noah. No marks over the letters. We just go with W-I-L-S-O-N.
Right.
It could be two L's. You don't know.
It's not Wilson.
No.
You're not German.
No, I'm not German. Not even a little bit.
Except you kind of lean towards the Germans in terms of your... You're more German in personality than you are Irish, I think. Well...
I'll pull a gun right out of my warm-up suit and shoot it in the air in 1 second. Did you pronounce your name correctly to Anna Nicole Smith?
No, I don't think she knew my name. I don't think she knew my first name.
She didn't even know your first name?
I doubt it.
You worked on the last thing, the last like series of commercials that she worked on.
Trim Spa, baby.
Yeah. And you had you changed the spot or something. You were a producer. I think I've said that in the introduction of you. You're a producer and you art director.
You didn't really introduce me.
Sorry, John Pavlovsky, producer, director, art director of commercial shoots and commercials, infomercials, features, all kinds of stuff. The kind of guy that gets the work done. So you're working on Trim Spa. It's a diet pill.
Diet pill.
And they hire Anna Nicole Smith, who is at that point of, I get, because I remember talking about
big it with proportion at the time. Big lady. Remember her reality show?
Well, right.
And she was big. But and they were making fun of her.
But also, you know, hey, she was unwell. She was not all there at that point in her life and career.
No, just watch her show. It was like this girl, this poor girl's at the edge.
But she was losing weight. She did a diet pill.
Yeah, she actually was taking what I found out later, she was actually taking a product called Trim Spa and asked for more products, saying, this is great. And they went, really? And because she was losing weight, they went, hey, would you, you know, endorse the product and maybe be our spokesperson? Sure. And so they sent her more product.
Cases and cases of whatever it is, ephedrine stuff.
Ephedra.
Right.
You know, and she was taking it supposedly and lost 70 pounds in 30 days. Now, come on.
Who hasn't done that?
70 pounds in 30 days. You're not losing 70 pounds in 30 days.
She said that?
She actually did. Yes, she did. Because the first commercial I did, she had lost 70 pounds. She was still a big girl. Look, but remember, Anna Nicole was always big. She was the first guest girl.
And when she was voluptuous.
She was a voluptuous woman.
Yes.
But now she was, she was getting close to what I think her regular weight was when we shot her.
But you're producing the spot.
Brain dead. Absolutely brain dead.
What do you mean?
She couldn't walk. Oh, if you want to hear the whole story. I mean, literally, we're at Universal Studios, big soundstage, treating her like a star, the whole thing. She walks in. She's literally being shuffled in, I should say. Not walked in. Shuffled in. Like an old, poor old lady with slippers. Literally, the slippers, the house slippers, the fuzzy.
Yeah.
And just shuffling foot to foot to foot and literally being held up under her arm by her bodyguard. Big guy.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, wow.
And that's in the morning?
Yeah, first thing in the morning. And they got her into makeup, and we're like hoping, well, maybe, it's morning, and she'll just,
get her a cup of coffee.
Get going here.
Somebody get her one of those muffin tops with the brand in it.
It never got better. And then they brought her down for the first setup. The first setup was really close-ups. But she still is supposed to be doing like a runway. Like she's back on the runway. She's back on the
runway model thing.
Runway model, do her walk, turn. We're going to have the camera go, the whole thing. So we're doing the close-ups, and she couldn't even stand on her mark for the close-ups. So we sat her down on a stool, lowered the camera, just did the close-ups.
That's some runway. Like they gave her rolling office chairs?
This part was just close-ups on the face.
Oh, on her face. Gotcha.
So... And I will say, I will give her this, that when that camera rolled and she knew it was a close-up and the camera was catching her, there was a spark. There was something in her eye. There was still something there. But when we started doing the runway walk, she couldn't walk. She was falling over, kind of. The poor bodyguard was right out of camera frame, ready to catch her. And we go, we can't do this. So we just propped her on a stool, took the camera, put it on a dolly, put it on a Dutch head, and started moving the camera to make it look like she was walking towards us, even though the camera and everything was moving to her.
So everything else had to move, so it looked like she was moving.
Now, and we had to stay halfway up, you know, cowboy shot. Couldn't go down to legs because legs weren't moving. So then later, when, you know, we took the break, they had the lunch, the whole thing. Then we got her at least standing at the end, like doing your, you know, you've walked. Now you're at your point on the runway. Do a little spin, do a little move. And she stood there. She was doing okay. She was doing all right with that. But I literally throughout the whole day, only two things that were said to me.
What, from her?
From her. I'm showing her on a monitor, you know, how she looks. And I have to say, she did look good. And I was trying to encourage her and tell her, look, you look great. It's this. She just kept looking at it, and turned to me and just went, beautiful? And I still don't know. She's saying, it's beautiful, or the way you're shooting it is beautiful, or asking me, am I beautiful? I don't know what. I still don't know what it is.
But it was
yes,
like a
Anna,
question.
It's beautiful. That's all I said. It's all beautiful. That's it. Later on in the day, she was wondering about why the watermelon was yellow. She never saw a yellow watermelon in her life. So I said, I was joking. I said, well, you know that all watermelon is yellow. It's just in America, it never really took on, so they were injecting it with red dye. I go, just like the pistachios, you know, the red pistachios, they're really just natural color. I never knew that.
Wow.
She goes, it tastes exactly the same. But I was like, I really didn't know if I should say I'm only kidding, Anna.
Yeah.
That's the two things. That's it. And I shot it 3 days. And the second day, for the second commercial, it was an 8-hour shoot. I only had her on camera for 40 minutes. The rest of the time, she just laid flat dead in a Winnebago.
So she talked to you just a couple of words the first day, and the second day, nothing. 40 minutes.
Yep, 40 minutes. Shot that the second commercial in 40 minutes. Three angles, that was it.
And the third day, did she work at all?
Third day, yeah, it was about the same. It was about the same. A couple hours we got her going, and that was it. That was it. She never got her lines right. Never got her line, and all she had to say was, "How did you do it?" I go, "How do you do it?" I mean, the extras on the set. How'd you do it? You look great, Anna. How'd you do it? You hear the old paparazzi screaming at her, and she's just supposed to turn to them and say, "Trim spa, baby." Never timed it right. I had it on camera. Everybody asking her, "Hey." Never. So I had to wait until we got into post, and then just jam it and move it, and I had to put my voice in at the right time. So you could actually hear my voiceover in the commercial.
Wow. They said Marilyn Monroe couldn't do that in that movie with Tony Curtis, the Billy Wilder
Something like
movie.
Something Like It Hot.
Something Like It Hot, where she just had to come in and go to a drawer and go, where's that bottle? Because she's looking for booze or something. And she's like, where's that bottle? Just opening stuff and just take a bottle out of the top drawer. And she just, you know, take 65. She couldn't just go, where's that bottle? And open the drawer and take it.
But you see why. You know why. And I'm glad you brought it up. Because Anna Nicole Smith is the reincarnation of Marilyn Monroe.
What are you talking about?
Anna Nicole Smith actually believed she was Marilyn Monroe reincarnated.
But she didn't say that to you. She was talking to you about watermelon.
Not that day. That's the shoot. At her house when she wouldn't even get out of bed to meet us. She was in bed. It's like walking in to meet the queen or something. And everywhere in her house at the time, if there was a picture of her, there was a picture of Marilyn Monroe similar next to it. If a painting was of her, the painting was similar to Marilyn Monroe's. Now, she didn't get into it. It was Howard Stern who started explaining to me that, well, you know, she's the reincarnation of Marilyn Monroe.
Not the radio guy. This is the lawyer guy who whatever.
Supposedly later was
his handler, whatever.
Yeah.
Guy.
So,
well, you see these girls. You work on shoots. You worked on America's Top Model, right?
Well,
there's something
kind
to
of,
shoot
yes,
on that.
Yes. We did the
in an art direction capacity.
Shoot.
So you're around these models all the time. So why? Why do they have a relationship with a camera? And do you think such damaged relationships with everybody else? Do the damaged relationships in love of a beautiful girl? So you have a beautiful young lady. Do all the damaged relationships create something, some longing that the camera actually sees, and we confuse that with a charisma? Or are they just, or
out of the categories we just talked about, I wouldn't even put them in the, I wouldn't put Anna Nicole Smith or those girls that are trying to be next top model in the same category. I mean, I wouldn't put them in a category of models or real pretty women or anything. I think it's a whole, and that's what makes it sad. I think in the category that Anna Nicole was in, or these girls trying to be next top model, or these reality shows where they're, you know, all of a sudden they think they're, you know, Snooki thinks she's a celebrity and a star or whatever. I think they're literally not, you know, an artist or creative or talent in any way. And really what they're doing is, it's psychological. I think whether they're modeling or whatever they're getting noticed for, like a Paris Hilton. She's not, what is Paris Hilton? Is she an actress? No. She's a singer? No. She started doing all these things. She's a personality. She's literally just an object. So I think a lot of these girls are automatically, they're prone to thinking of themselves as objects. And now there's a market for that. Now you could be somebody by just being an object. I don't think all models, I mean, go back, let's say, come on, go back to the days of an Audrey Hepburn. She was gorgeous. Or Grace Kelly. Absolutely stunning. Gorgeous. But, you know, again, Grace Kelly, we're saying the word grace. And she had grace. She had style. She had talent. She went to school. She got herself educated. She was learning a craft. And I think they're able to separate, you know, let's say the product of who they are from the soul of who they are. And today it's just one thing. They are the product, and it's their soul at the same time.
Wow. So you see them. I mean, how do you ever find yourself in a position to try to, oh, I don't know what I'm saying, try to help them in life or say something that makes sense to them?
And you see it more than I do. Come on.
What are you talking about?
You see it as much as I
do. Don't start with me.
And you take advantage of it every possible time you can.
Absolutely. That's me. Boy. Dagnabbit, how did he get it out of me? What do you mean take advantage of it?
You like the objectification of women.
Oh, shut up.
Come on. If we're going to be honest here, people are getting to know you on this podcast.
Oh, shut up. The objectification of women. I've talked to more actresses trying to get them to respect themselves and actually think of themselves as an actual person and an artist.
You know it.
I may smack
you. But you do see it. You see the same thing I do is what I'm saying. I mean, if we're going to discuss it, you know, you see it more than I do, honestly. You do.
I see it in young ladies who are trying to make it, or whatever we would think of success now, which seems to be, like you said, just making yourself a commodity and just kind of selling.
Well, that's what it is. I think it's just validation. Somehow they're really looking for the validation, and it's never going to be enough. It's never going to be enough. What, birds now? Where did you go? Tom, are you coming back?
I'm here. I was caught for a moment feeling sorry for them.
I don't feel sorry.
You don't?
No. No. I really don't.
Well, I do. I honestly do, because they drive here and their mom and dad are concerned, and they look. I've gotten emails from people. They don't even know me. I mean, I don't work on all kinds of shows with actresses, but they've seen me in something and they email me. My daughter, and you know, we live in Minnesota, and my daughter wants to be an actress, and we just wonder, is that a good idea? Is everyone out there crazy and on drugs like TV says? I feel sorry for the parents. I feel sorry for the girls who are coming into a very, very difficult situation.
Well, but look, it's
to
not
meet
all.
People like
That's
you.
What I'm trying to say is, I don't think it's any different than any. You're going to not agree with this, and it's okay. I literally think that today it's more so in every walk of life that we see it in this area of, whether it's entertainment, reality TV, has now all of a sudden regular people, everyday life, are becoming celebrities. And I think in a certain way, you see it everywhere. I don't think, and I'm saying, I don't know if now the world or this country or our social demeanor that's out there, whatever you want to call it, has made women literally have no way of validating themselves. And if you are able to, then, you know, who cares? I'm literally saying I think in a certain way that we think we see it in the entertainment industry with girls that want to be actresses or models. Oh, because they're pretty and they're going to come here and be taken advantage of. And, you know, I think it's the same thing in all areas. Women, look at women journalists now. I mean, I hate to say it, but what? They literally have the leg chair so that you could see the legs. You know, now these are smart women. Now, let's say they walked into another area of life. They weren't going into journalism. Oh, I'm going to be a model. There's a validation need. And they're using their looks. And today, I think women are using their looks more, and not even because they have to. It's expected. So I think if you have the right kind of personality and you've been raised a certain way and you have a certain morality, and maybe, you know, whatever you want to call it, a faith, a spirituality, a religious conviction. You know, a spiritual side of you is healthy. An emotional side of you is healthy. You're not going to be objectified. You're not going to need the validation. But I think now,
right, because you're going to fight your own objectification throughout your life.
Yes, you're going to find, you're going to validate yourself.
Right, right. And people will say, "Well, you are this." And you say, "What are you talking about? I mean, I'm 70 things other than that. Doesn't matter what right. you think of me."
And they're going to know they're, you know, and I think they know they're beautiful. If, you know, they are, they, you know, they're going to say, look, that's not just who I am. That's not the only person I am. It's not just my physical, you know, attractiveness. But I think if you are lacking that emotional stability and maybe even the spiritual, and let's not ignore that, the spiritual aspect of your personality is also lacking, then I literally think you become dependent on validation outside of yourself. And I think our society is causing women to literally lose that ability to validate themselves. That's why we have so many women that are abused and staying in abused relationships and abused and, you know, abusing themselves in this industry. We see it all the time. They're abusing themselves more than they're abused.
Well, I disagree with that.
Oh,
I disagree with that.
In
yeah,
what sense?
Well, they're not abusing themselves more than they're being abused.
They're being used.
Yes,
but they're abusing themselves by allowing that. They're abusing themselves by just not looking at trying to get better or get past it. They're using their own. They're using their attractiveness. They're expecting the abuse in a certain way, and allowing it. So that's what I'm saying. In a certain way, they're abusing themselves more than really it's brought upon them. Because, I mean, you see it. You see the girls that are talented. You see the girls that are really, truly, let's say, models. They're not allowing it. They're not going to allow you to play any games with them. It's those that are desperate enough to go, look, I got to do what I got to do to get up another level. They're allowing it. They're calling it upon themselves.
Well, and they're the saddest, you know, and they're the saddest ones. They're the saddest ones who have an empty space that something needs to be filled, and they came here. And the evidence is very clear that what happens when you do that is you get really damaged and people take advantage of you. And then in the sad case of Anna Nicole Smith, you can very easily end up dying from it. It's fatal.
Yeah. Well.
Or in your case.
She's not innocent. She's a victim, but she's not innocent. She's not an innocent victim to the abuse that she's poor. You know, I feel sorry for her, but she's not innocent in her own victimization.
But she's a girl from a small town. She's not, you know, she may have been a bright person, but she was not educated, and she came out in order to be a model and was immediately very successful. But you know those guys, John. I'm not saying you're one of those guys. I'm saying you're one of the guys who actually has a personal character.
Yeah, I know, but her 90-year-old husband did not come abuse her. She went and latched on to him, okay, and got that and fought for that money. She went to him. You think she didn't know exactly what she was doing?
Okay, I'll give you that one.
Yeah, okay. Now, maybe after that, hey, okay. You know, that then the abuse, then the self-abuse began. Because why? She's fighting for years for that money. Now, come on. I had, you know, that's what I mean. She's allowing somewhat the abuse, and there's a certain self-abuse. Hey, and I'll tell you, you want to stand, you know, somebody that I you know, you're going to think, what are you talking about? I'll tell you, Sandra Bullock. Absolutely think, if we're going to talk about stories or whatever, I give her a lot of credit. Respect her. Her husband made that one wrong move. No messing around, no caring about the public, no caring about publicity. Boom. Cut him loose. Move on with her life. You know, I'm not going to allow it to happen.
Well, clearly, she's an intelligent person,
woman.
And she's very, very self-aware.
Yeah.
And she's used her both her beauty, her intelligence, her power, her business acumen to do very, very well, which she's certainly done. And everybody congratulates her and respects her.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm just – now, I'm not putting – you can't put Anna Cole Smith in the same category. This is what I mean. Now, what makes somebody – like, you know, Sandra Bullock, who, come on, same young girl coming into town, wanting to make a career, gets to where she's at, and is going to deal with the same kind of abuse, same
right.
kind of pitfalls.
And just says, no, this is the way I'm going to do it. Right. And they say, no, you have to do this. You have to jump through this hoop. Well, I'm not a hoop jumper. That's the thing about me, you have to understand. Well, that's how we do it here. Well, that's not how I do it. So I do it this way. And then... there, you know, there's 2 seconds of silence, and then everyone does it your way.
This is a lot deeper than Dick Cavett ever got.
With who? Dick Cavett got pretty deep with people.
I think we should.
This
try
is like
to
a
do,
Dick Cavett, should, Norman Mailer. No, maybe I'll punch
little,
you. Maybe I'll punch
little,
you at the end.
We should do a little Dick. You should
start a fist
you should
fight.
Take on a little Dick Cavett-y kind of approach to this interview. For
which
now.
Reminds me of the time I had dinner with Groucho Marx last week. Which no.
At Sardi's? Was that at Sardi's?
It was at no, Dick
no,
Cavett
with
would always...
Dahl. Dick Cavett spent a lot
well, with
of
everyone.
With Gore Vidal. But he was always with Gore Vidal in New York and at
yes.
Sardi's.
And if you asked him what's the weather like today, he would say, well, I don't know, but when Gore Vidal and I have lunch and then Marlon Brando and I eat later, but I don't do that. Am I a name dropper guy?
Is Gore Vidal, Vidal Sassoon's, are they related?
I think they are. Okay. Gore Vidal Sassoon. He's a writer who also does
hair.
Yeah. How did Dick Cavett? First, we went from Buddy Hackett to an examination of the poor, pitiful souls of the girls coming
to
Hollywood.
I'm not buying into you right now. I'm not feeling connected.
I'm going to Norman.
No,
I'm
no,
punching
I'm being
you right
honest.
In the face.
Let's get, you know, you got an audience out there.
Okay,
okay,
Mr. Honesty.
And I'm literally saying, I don't buy into you. I know you long enough. I don't think you're really interested in this conversation. I think you're pandering to your guest right now. And that's a very Dick Cavett style, pandering. You're pandering to me.
You want to mess with me?
That was
hey,
a little, that was
I'm the only host of a show who will actually throttle a guest. I'm
now,
how am I pandering
whole,
to you?
What's the whole purpose to this podcast?
How am I pandering to you?
You're pandering because I know you're not agreeing with a lot of what I'm saying, and you're getting riled. I could see that vein in your head.
I don't have a vein in my head. I have one large vein that goes to my brain because I think of things. I don't have the anger pulsing
oh,
neck
you do.
Thing.
You do. I could get you really riled up. You got a quick temper. People don't know that. You got a quick.
Oh, shut
no, no.
up.
I'm going to say like this. You got a long fuse. You could deal with a lot. But if the right button is pushed on you, you will go ballistic.
When have you when have you ever seen me go ballistic?
Oh,
ballistic.
I saw you on the stage once. I saw you on the stage doing comedy.
I was
almost took
acting.
Out a poor autistic child. literally almost took him out.
Oh, man. Oh,
no, that
people.
Story should be shared. You should share that story. Now we'll switch interviewers. Hey.
I didn't even know
did
what
you
was
ever have a
hey,
bad
folks.
Moment on stage?
Hey, friends. No, it wasn't even a bad moment. It was just a night. John came to the club. What was it, Brea? The Improv or something? John came with me one night. He'll do sometimes. And it's very dark. I can only see maybe two tables into the audience, and then it's just dark. And what was happening? I was getting heckled by a guy.
Well, you were looking to the audience for, there was somebody up front that you were doing, you know, you were beginning to do your improv with.
I was sort of improvising. It was a kind of a loosey-goosey
show. And you asked him, hey, so what do you do for a living? And he worked at a smoothie, some kind of smoothie shop. And you went, oh, so what's like your, you know, what's the most popular, you know, smoothie you make? And he said something like Frazzle Razzle Frappe or something. You went, oh, Frazzle Razzle. Then you went on to other people. You went to whatever.
I was working.
Then you came back to him and you were trying to remember the name of the drink. Of the,
yeah,
and he was like, what was that again? What was, and from the other side of the audience,
well, the other side of the crowd,
you couldn't really hear exactly what that person said, and you picked up on it, and you went, what are you drinking over? Oh, somebody,
but it was
what?
From the dark, yes. It was
so
in
you
the
said,
pitch
rabble, rabble, and you just kept. You just now were ripping on that guy, whatever. Just kept going, going, going.
He didn't say it once. He didn't just say it once.
No, he kept trying to get it right.
He was saying it, yes. He was saying it numerous times. So I'm like, what is with you, man? And then
out of nowhere, you just see this guy rise up out of the audience.
What did he say?
I'm going to kick your ass. Literally starts to climb over the rail of the
layer. There's a wall.
Separation.
A separation wall between the tables as you go back row after row. And in the dark, I see like the guy is kind of climbing
over. Well, the lights are hitting.
Of course.
You.
The guy's climbing over these walls and everything. And he's coming to, I'm like, what? What in the world? The guy's coming onto the stage to fight me or something?
To kick your ass, as he said. And the unfortunate thing, and the timing was exact. Like, and you were lucky because I'm sitting on that side, and the whole section that was there, and a bunch of young women, they went, oh no, oh my God. And I'm looking at him.
Comes into the light
as he turned to get over the wall.
Yeah.
You could see just enough facing us.
It's a kid.
Special needed, you know, young man. Not a kid. I'm going to say early 20s.
Yeah. But clearly there are major
needs.
Issues. I mean, maybe he's a Back to the Future fan, whatever, and he wanted to see my show. But from the dark, he comes out, and he's in the light actually doing some, you know, crazy karate moves and
stuff.
He got over the wall.
And he was there with his mother and father,
yes.
Who tried to stop him.
And then as soon as, you know, and of course, no one, you know, everyone gasps. The audience, everyone, the cosmos understands what's going on with an instant. Everyone kind of, I put up my hand to stay, like, oh, whoa, 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 don't come up on stage, you know. No, this is, you know, and I'm immediately sort of being gentle from the stage going, hey, it's a show.
A patronizing, I think.
But you don't go back
to
your
you
seat.
Caught it. You could see, and I could see, that's the part that I'll never forget. When it registered, when he came in, you know, I'm going, oh my, you know, how's he seeing this? You know, because I'm thinking, if that light is hitting you too much, and I'm thinking, just, Tom, don't raise your hand. Don't push this kid back. And, you know, but then I saw it register on you.
So
but only
back,
you, only you could
down.
Push a special needs child so far that he screams in a full house of people, I'm going to kick your ass. So don't tell me. You got it. You could push people's buttons and your buttons get pushed. I've seen it.
You never saw. What did you say? Oh. No, I've never. You've never seen me go ballistic. Never.
Oh, no. But I've seen your buttons get pushed where just the veins are popping. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You did
people,
not.
People, you think, oh, you think just gentle soul. Oh. Oh.
I am a gentle soul.
You couldn't play that. Oh, what's the role you never want to talk about? You couldn't get that kind of violence and. You know, real good bad boy, you know, action in you to play Biff if you didn't have it in you. You're not that good an actor. Oh, see, yeah. Look. Yeah, people. He really has that temper. He's calmed down as he's a father. He's a good father. He's calmed down, but boy, he likes to find that moment. We should flip this on you. Let honesty reign in the podcast world that you're in. Let your fans, let those people really see you.
You can't even pronounce your own last name. What are you talking about? I am the golden retriever of life, okay?
Who's your favorite interviewer ever?
My interviewer?
Yeah,
or interviewee.
Interviewer.
Because interviewee, definitely not you.
Interviewer? Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't.
Oh.
I didn't watch a lot of interview shows. Hey, I've said on this. I may stink at it. I don't know. I just talk with people. I just kind of strike up a conversation,
really,
and then like
were.
You, they come up into the soul. I don't know, man. They damage themselves. They abuse themselves. And then I'm like, geez, we were just talking about Buddy Hackett shooting a gun into the air. Nah, you know they want the abuse themselves, Tom. So I don't know. I don't know who my favorite interviewer was. I watched all those shows. My favorite interview was Dinah Shore. She had the daytime show. It was nice. Mike Douglas.
See. I'm not buying it.
Mike Douglas, you know.
Do you think anybody out there listening to this knows Dinah Shore?
No, I have no
idea. Remembers Dinah Shore?
No, of course not.
Or Merv Griffin or Mike Douglas?
No. They don't.
Now.
They don't. That's what? That's why we should change the subject.
Was Merv Griffin and Mike Douglas two different people? Or were they the same person?
Are you drunk?
No, were they really?
Are you drunk right now?
Weren't they pretty much the same? Not much difference between them.
No, they were different. They were different. Both were singers and both got talk shows.
Yeah.
But Mike Douglas's show happened in Philadelphia.
Yes.
And Merv Griffin's was in California.
Mike Douglas came on in the afternoon.
Yes, he did. It was one of the first syndicated talk shows. So you were a producer of Broadway shows, though,
but
weren't you?
He interviewed Kreskin.
Who, Merv Griffin?
Yeah. Mike Douglas. I'm sure both of them, but Mike Douglas.
They did. Kreskin was going around doing magic tricks and stuff. Yeah. Sure. Think of a number, John.
It has to be a single digit?
No, three-digit number.
Three-digit
yeah.
number. I got it.
All right, say what it is.
301.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
All right,
see? I repeat, there I'm not a go. Psychic. I only use – Kreskin will always do that. Say, I'm not a psychic. I only use the powers of my mind that anyone can do. But very early on, you produced an off-Broadway show that actually did
no,
it go
Broadway,
to
baby. Don't diminish my accomplishments.
Because your dad worked on Broadway.
Dad worked on Broadway.
He worked. Your dad, you told me, worked on Cleopatra.
Cleopatra, right? With Laurence Olivier and Vivian Leigh.
And yes. He turned like the wooden disc or something?
Well,
she,
I don't know.
She was being revealed.
It was a big set piece that would reveal her. You know,
yeah.
Like during the, you know, her, it was like this thing. He had to hold her, kind of hold her and let this thing turn. But he was a stage engineer, stage electrician, did that before I was born.
Yeah.
And then became a cameraman on the Perry Como variety show.
Uh-huh.
As cameraman. Worked as a cameraman on Crazy Joe Gallo. Crazy Joe. Remember Joe? Crazy Joe.
It was Joe. It was called Joe. Peter.
Peter Boyle.
Yeah, Peter Boyle.
Shot in New Jersey, Rahway State Prison. So he was an IOTS. He was a union guy. Oh, he'd be rolling
in
over.
In New Jersey. Oh, so Dad was in the mafia. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So I didn't know, John.
He was a business agent for the IOTS union. Yeah.
Wow. And then he was a projectionist.
That's when I was, you know, after he was married and he got married older. I mean, he was older.
So you lived out Cinema Paradiso.
Oh, yeah.
Going
to watch the movies, threading the projector.
What was your favorite movie that you
growing
saw?
Up as a kid?
Well, yeah, that you saw through the hole, through whatever, through the little
Cassidy
hole.
Was Cassidy and Sundance Kid.
And you loved that movie?
Just liked watching it from up there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Saw The Exorcist, though, when I was like 8 or 9, whatever that was.
You were 8?
Well, yeah. My mother didn't know what it was. My father wasn't watching the movie when he was showing it. He didn't care.
Well, he just read
he
the
just
newspaper
said, I don't know. It's interesting. It's like an archaeological dig. Because, you know, he watches it
the
when he's got to roll it.
Right.
So he sees that and he goes, and then when the role changes. And something about a boxing priest. That's all. So That's
so he would only watch the beginning of the reels.
The beginning of the reels.
So it was about some archaeology thing and a boxing
priest.
It's like
something about a priest that's a boxer. So my mother didn't know either. And like my brother, of course, they were older and they knew. And they were like, oh, come on, can we go? So they said, yeah, let's, you know, we'll go. And we never paid for movies growing up. Never paid. I didn't pay for a movie until I went to college. Anywhere in New Jersey. To show his card, boom, get in free. So we went to the movies. My brother and sisters go down to the theater, and we go up to the
projector. Oh, they're sitting in the chairs, and you're looking through the hole in where the projector.
And, you know, my mother and father are talking to my father's, like, friend and partner, because they would switch off. One work in the afternoon, one work at night. So they're just sitting and talking, and I finally go, yeah, can I go down? I'm going to get some popcorn. And yeah. They're not even concerned about anything. So I go down, I go into the theater, and there's an aisle seat, and I sit down in the aisle seat, and within, I gotta say, within about 30 seconds, it's that first, all of a sudden she's having convulsions, and she's jumping off the bed.
Oh, whipping her back and forth,
and
like,
Mommy's make it stop. And then she's like levitating and lands down, and her eyes roll back
in
her
head. Oh, when she flies up in the air and
The flying up in the air comes later when she's actually being exercised. This is like the first, she's still kind of... She's being taken over.
Right.
And she's able to still say it, talk in her own voice. And, Mommy, make it stop. The bed is shaking.
Right, where Ellen Burstyn's coming up the stairs and going, what is going on?
The thing slams the door, and then she comes in, and then she slams back on the bed, and her eyes roll back. And they're like, I just jumped out of that chair and ran out. And I ran out the door, and as soon as I ran out the door, I realized somebody else ran out with me. And there was like a grown black man, like 30-something years old, who just like ran out the door with me and then turned to me. It was like almost like a movie, because he turned to me and goes, man, I ain't going back in there. So I waited. I went up the stairs, a little shook up. And I kind of sneaked. Every time I looked out that little window to look, something horrible was happening. I didn't see it for years later.
That was a scary movie, man. I never saw it in the theater. We wouldn't be allowed to see that.
And Willard freaked me out.
Willard was at your dad's theater?
Willard was at my dad's theater, and I saw Willard. And I, freaked
out. The original, not the Crispin Glover one.
The original with Ernest Borgnine.
Ernest Borgnine was in Willard?
Ernest Borgnine was the boss in Willard, and literally, you know, the guy, I think he was Willard, the guy's name, and he turns the rats on to the boss, and they're all in the office, and then, you know, Ernest Borgnine standing there trying to tell him, like, hey, it's okay, stop, and literally the rats just come in and attack Ernest Borgnine. They're all over him, and he can't take it, they're biting him, and he flings himself out the office window. Still remember that.
How old were you then?
Figured I was 70s too. I was probably like 9.
Did they play like Zippity Doo Dah or anything? Song of the South? No, any Disney movies or anything?
Nope. Oh, I saw Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Oh, okay.
You know, that kind of thing.
All right.
But yeah. We've lost, I don't know how many people now that are out listening to this podcast.
What?
We lost a lot of people.
They were gone right after Buddy Hackett took out the gun. Are you kidding me? Thanks for coming on though, John. I'm done.
Oh, we're done now?
Well, after you say, like, people aren't listening, sure.
Well, we got to shake them up.
What are you talking about? No, after there's a 3-second pause, you go, well, nobody else is.
All right, now, you know, you're asking me a question. I'm going
to
ask you a question. Okay, so one interesting thing I think that the public should know.
That's not a question.
No, I'm going to make a statement and go to a question.
I
want your fans. I want the people out there to know. You should call in. You should talk to him. You should send him emails.
Call in. Wearing headphones. The sixth caller gets Blue Oyster Cult tickets.
Yeah. Call in.
Call in. Your switchboards are open now.
Are the switchboards on?
I'm Judy, the Time Life operator.
Is anybody on?
What's your point?
The point is, I think your fans should know. You could name anybody, any celebrity, any person that's been in film or TV. Ask Tom, give him a name, and he'll give you a story.
Well, that's true.
And it is really good.
It's both a testament, I think, to the powers I have of paying attention to various situations in which I've been placed, but also the fact that being around for decades, such a constellation of stars of every artistic discipline, and I've remained at the lower middle of
yeah,
the industry.
Yeah, but it's really good. Let's see
that
how it goes.
That says
let's
about me.
Let's get the people out there, really. Let's throw one out. Let's see. Let's hear a story. Jerry Lewis.
Jerry Lewis. I was Jerry Lewis was performing at I think the Cerrito Center for the Performing Arts, and my brother, when he was working in Santa Monica, befriended Jerry Lewis's son Scott. So I just got tickets with some friends. We didn't ask Scott. We paid for tickets. We went to see Jerry Lewis, and there was a small reception afterwards for some ticket holders or something. And I had never met Jerry Lewis. It was going to be a big thrill for me. And so we're standing there waiting for Jerry. Jerry comes in, and he's working the crowd and everything, and he's doing all his Jerry Lewis shtick. It's terrific. And you're thinking, wow, that's Jerry Lewis, you know. And Scott, his son, comes up and introduces me and a couple of the guys. Hey, Dad, this is Tom and some guys. They're actually stand-up comics. They came out to see you. And he goes, stand-up comics? What? I didn't invite stand. And he does this shtick, and he grabs my neck, and he's choking me. But he's whipping my head back and forth. But I just know, just relax. Just go with it. Don't fight him and let him do it. So he's whipping my head, and I'm going like this. Comics, I told you, get out of show business. I don't need any flabbing people competing with me. That kind of stuff. Anyway, so he's whipping my head back and forth, and he stops my head, leans in to within, 3 inches of my face, and says, with his hand still on the back of my neck, with that thing,
yeah,
like almost hugging me, cupping my neck, and says, if you're going to do comedy, make it visual. Slaps my face and goes off.
There you go. Now, why didn't you take his advice?
No, I did to a certain degree. To a certain degree, I did. No, and then I complimented him. I did, and he spent a lot of time with us because we were comics and everything. He was very gracious to us. He was, and I because I said, which was true at that point. He must have been he's 80 something now. He's had to be 70 something, and he did an hour and a half show. And it was Jerry Lewis shtick and everything, but he did a dance and he sang songs and he did shtick and he did the typewriter thing, and it was wonderful for everybody. But hey, we knew, like, you were up on stage under the lights for a long time, being, you know, 72 years old or whatever. Yeah. So he was very gracious to us, and that's my Jerry Lewis story. If you're going to do comedy, make it visual. That was it. Sorry if it disappointed you.
The audience could not see that because that was visual.
The slap in my face.
And it was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my Jerry Lewis. Is that good enough, or should I have had another
one?
Should I make them up?
That's for today. That's good.
All right.
I think, though, you should give your audience a story every time you're on.
I'll try.
So, audience out there, email them, contact them, ask them for story.
Now I'm going to get all kind of weird people going,
I want
them. Hey, when did you ever work with Bjork? Or whatever her name is. That the right name?
The
Icelandic singer lady that does weird kind of performance art stuff?
See, I don't even know.
You know, because I don't have a lot of those kind of things. I just have regular show busy stuff. A guy who did a lot of unusual things and was paying attention. Thanks for being here, John. I think.
Okay. I guess, you know... I'll just leave then. Do you have a sign off?
I might throw you out.
Do you have a sign off?
Yeah, but that's after you leave. I sing a whole song.
Is there any music that comes in
as I walk out? Yes, the music is coming up now. It's not the theme of I Dream of Jeannie. It's a different whole thing.
That's da 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 da. I didn't do that.
No.
I was trying to do the Johnny Carson.
Oh. Ba da ba ba da ba ba da ba. John Pavlovsky, thanks for being on.
Thank you.
John. John Pavlovsky is, as I said, a producer who makes things happen. It's not the big Tom Cruise movie, but he represents to me the vast majority of working people in this industry. Come to California to work hard, which he certainly does. And old buddy, as you could hear, he just likes giving. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Thanks so much for listening. Consider subscribing or tell a friend. Thanks to Emily Wilson for producing. Thanks to Chris and Katie over at Nerdist. Thank you to McPherson Guitars, Dean Markley Strings for helping me out. Please come see me live if you would be so kind. Hey, to listen to the podcast. But thanks most of all to you. I'm having a lot of fun. I hope you're having fun enjoying it. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.